10:04, I'm Matt Neely on 10:30 The Voice. A pedestrian was killed in a hit-and-run crash near Grant and Stone late Friday. Tucson Police Department said the accident happened around 9 p.m. when the man tried to cross Stone while not in a crosswalk. The name of the pedestrian is being withheld until his family can be notified. TPD said the driver of the vehicle fled the scene in a black 2015 through 2018 Mercedes C-Class. Anyone with information is asked to call 911 or 88 Crime. Testimony continues this week in the murder trial of Christopher Clements. He's accused of kidnapping and killing 13-year-old Maribel Gonzalez. Last Friday, the defense called its first witness to the stand after the state rested its case. A forensic pathologist from Phoenix spent more than an hour on the stand trying to cast doubt on how Gonzalez died. She said since the autopsy report says the cause of death is undetermined, would be difficult to say if it was a homicide. She said it could have been heat stroke since Maribel died in June, or it could have been drugs since the body was decomposed. The trial is expected to resume tomorrow. And Coronado National Forest will start prescribed burns in October. With the help of local and state agencies, forest staff will do pile and broadcast burns across the forest. The burns will likely last until early spring. These burning events are done to help thin out the wood, reduce forest fire fuel, and restore the ecological balance. Drivers are asked to use caution when driving near burn areas and be aware of any smoke over the road. Tucson weather. Gusty winds are expected today through Wednesday. Slight chances of storms. Highs today, 98 with a 20% chance of afternoon and evening thunderstorms. Overnight low, 73. 97 tomorrow and breezy. Highs will gradually trend to the low 90s by Friday. 84 degrees in Tucson. Now it's time for Win Tucson.
Happy Monday, everybody, and welcome back to Win Tucson. It was not a good week for my football teams. I'm sorry, U of A, and I'm sorry, Arizona Cardinals, but we will keep trying. I'm really excited about today's guest, though. My first guest is a, full disclosure, a good friend, Joseph Chaplick, and Joseph has been elected to the Arizona legislature in what is now LD3. Joseph has more than 25 years of leadership experience building and guiding top-tier companies. His past business knowledge, expertise, and accomplishments with Fortune 500 companies brings a business perspective to our legislature, which I think is so critical. It was only in 2019 that he entered into politics to make a difference for his community and for our state. He is married with two children and resides in Scottsdale. And the very first time I met Joseph, he was volunteering with the U.S. Marshals. And we were both at an event for Shop with a Cop to help children that would otherwise not have Christmas and to give Christmas to children of fallen officers. Joseph, thank you so much for agreeing to come on. I'm sorry about your Cardinals losing also. Welcome to Win Tucson.
Kathleen, thank you. Yeah, it was another tough week for the Arizona Cardinals. I'm not sure what's going on there with their offense.
I think we're paying our quarterback too much.
You know, it's like politics, you know? I mean, it's like where we spend our government money. I would rather have paid $3 million for a quarterback that's been an experienced backup that probably could produce just as much and use the other $37 million a year on an offensive line. I think that would have been a better use of the $40 million a year we're paying the guy.
I don't think they're getting the message. I keep wearing my Fitzgerald shirt, but it doesn't seem to be making any difference. I appreciate.
I wore mine yesterday as well.
Yeah, see?
Larry Fitzgerald.
Solidarity. Well, first of all, congratulations on winning your primary, which essentially you have no general election. Is that correct?
That is correct. My reelection was mostly the primary because with the redistricting, there was one open seat in the district. I was the incumbent in the other seat, ran for re-election. I won significantly, and another gentleman, Alex Culloden, will be serving with me in the two seats. There is no Democrat in the general election this November, so therefore we both are going to be elected, and I'll be serving my second term down at the State House.
And Alex was here last week to talk about the issues of water in our state. So it's very great, and I'm thrilled to have you guys represent us there. You worked on a lot of boards for nonprofits, and last year in the legislative session, there was a license plate that got passed, not just one, but one that you and I worked on together for the Alice Cooper School of Rock. And would you tell my listeners what it takes in the state to get your own license plate, what the purpose of that is, and what the purpose of this particular plate will be?
You know, it's such a great cause, what Alice Cooper does here for our community. For years, he's been doing this. And the license plates, you know, if you've driven on the Arizona roads, you've seen various different plates on cars, and all of those go to, you know, an individual nonprofit organization to help in some way. And so if I back up a step, Kathleen,
sure.
to get any bill passed is an enormous process through the, you know, the chambers, the committees, then they need to cross to the other chamber. You have to go through the committees again, and then, of course, get signed into law by the governor. So every bill is important. Every bill is difficult. That's the way the process should, so we don't pass things quickly. And so we worked on this, as you know, and it's a youth music and arts special plates is the technical term. But what it does is it provides funds not only to the state, but to a nonprofit organization. In this case, it's for the Alice Cooper Solid Rock Teen Centers. He has two of those, one in Mesa and one in North Phoenix. And what the plates, you know, again, this is generally speaking for all the license plates you see on the road that are nonprofits. An organization will come to the legislature, have an idea to run a license plate. Again, it has to be a nonprofit organization. And what happens is they have to first put up $32,000 once the bill gets put in, you know, once the bill gets written and passed through the system. So the first step, again, is pass the bill and get it signed by law. When that occurs, this organization will put $32,000 to pay for all the costs of the license plates. And so it costs our state $0. These are great bills in terms of bringing in revenue, costing us $0 as a state. And when the funds start rolling in from the sale of the plates, there's usually a $25 fee to get a special plate, to get a special, they call them specialty plates, and you can pick any one you want. So if you get a specialty plate out of that $25, $8 goes to the state, $17 goes to the donation to the fund.
Right.
And so, again, $25 gets split up, state gets money for doing nothing, the nonprofit gets money from people purchasing the plate, goes back into the community, and helps everyone.
And isn't it true that, so you get $17 the first time you buy the plate, but then when you renew, isn't there renewable fees that also continue to go? So it's kind of like building an account for the nonprofit.
Right. Every time you renew your tags, it's $25 to keep the plate, just like any other thing. But here's the other item on this. The nonprofit that puts the $32,000 up, so the state doesn't have to pay out of pocket anything for these plates.
Yes.
The organization gets their $32,000 back too. So they'll start pulling their $32,000 back, so they get reimbursed as well. Because it doesn't have to be the nonprofit that puts the money up. It could be another avenue of the sources of money. But they get their money back. So, again, it doesn't cost the state anything. We split the $25, $8, and $17. And every time they renew their tags, that $25 gets paid again. So it's a great cause. The license plates in Arizona, we're one of those states that have multiple different plates. We just have so many organizations. And then some sell more than others. I do think we need to cut back the ones that aren't selling anymore. Maybe they're old, been out there for a while, and nobody's doing anything with them. I think we need to have a cutoff. If you're not selling X amount, then unfortunately we may
retire
need to
those
remove
plates.
Those. Yeah, you retire them out. But something like Alice Cooper's Teen Center, you know, Solid Rock Teen Centers, I think this is going to be one of the top 10 most popular license plates out there. I've seen the design. I'm sure you have.
I have.
It's a good-looking license plate.
I think next month we're going to be actually doing an official rollout. And the work that Alice Cooper does with the School of Rock, and proof is in the pudding. You and I have attended many events. The work that he does for these kids is just exceptional, and to have been a part of this, I'm super proud. And you as, and I know, helping our youth is first and foremost for Alice Cooper and his wife, Cheryl. We are going to take a break. And Joseph, when we come back, I want to talk about what's the legislature, since you're already there and you can start thinking about this, what's the legislature's top priorities going to be come 2023? So I am so grateful to have my guest, Joseph Chaplick from LD3, the new LD3 was 23-3. Got to keep up with all this. And we'll be right back after this break. I'm Kathleen Wynn with Wynn Tucson. Thank you for joining me. Wynn Tucson, brought to you Monday through Friday by me, Kathleen Wynn, where we promise to turn down the rhetoric and turn up the results. And I'm so glad to have my special guest, Joseph Chaplick. So, Joseph, as we're walking into 2023 and we're walking into the state legislature, what do you think the top three priorities are in 2023?
You know, I think we have more than three, of course, but if I had to break down the top three, honestly, the first one is definitely border security and public safety. We are out of control as a country right now with this open border policy. And it's not just immigrants coming across our border for a better life. And you can't blame people that want to come to America, but they're doing it illegally. But more importantly, we're having drugs pour across our borders. Fentanyl. They're making drug busts in Phoenix, largest in history, of hundreds and thousands and millions of fentanyl pills are being found. And they're in colorful little round shapes like Skittles for the kids. This is a huge problem for America, not just for Arizona. The border security and public safety, that is a top priority. We're going to have to take it into our own hands as a state, because the federal government's not doing anything. And we owe it to our citizens. We owe it to our country to shut down this border here in Arizona. And hopefully California, New Mexico, and we know Texas is doing what they're doing, follow suit. So we close these gaps for that reason. And you got terrorists coming across the border, too. I mean, they're coming across the border. They're finding, I don't know, 100 of them? That means how many did we not find?
Exactly. I think I had heard 97, so 100. I'm sure there's been 100 terrorists, known terrorists, that have come in. And these are people that have come in, been deported, come back. You know, some of them I've heard 5-6 times. So clearly whatever system we're using isn't working. What is your...
Right.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, and I was just going to say, with, you know, the public safety tied right into that, you know, we obviously have to back the blue, support the police. You know, this defund movement the last few years is now we're feeling the pain of it. And it was, you know, obviously not the right thing to do. I don't know what the Democrats are trying to do to this country. But now we're seeing the crime. We're seeing the unsafe communities in almost every city, every state. So we absolutely have to enforce the public safety and enforce the laws. Number two, you know, for me, I really think it's fiscal responsibility. We have to have a responsible government. Drain the swamp. We're spending too much money as a state. We really are. Our priorities are wrong with where we're putting the money. I see how much money we're moving down there. I fell out of my seat when I see how much money we have and what we're doing with it. We have, you know, we had a $5 billion surplus on a $12 billion budget. And we blew all of it, $17, $18 billion. Mm-hmm. I think we could have done a little differently with some of the surplus. But we definitely have to stay in a responsible way, our fiscal priorities. And that, I think, is the second, because if we keep overspending, we're going to have trouble down the road in the future. And I think this is one of the areas that legislators overlook down the road. You know, kick the can, they always say in D.C.
Right.
Well, we can't keep kicking the can, and we definitely can't do it here in Arizona. So we got to look at priorities. It, you know, going forward, not just what this year looks like. And every year we have a big budget.
And Joseph, if the recession, I believe that we're in a recession, or at least at the very starting of one. And if we're doing great in Arizona, a lot of people are moving here. So I think we're somewhat in a bubble. But if we're not responsible for a future recession or for a recession that does hit us, and we haven't put any money away and we have spent every penny that we have, we're not being responsible as citizens or as elected officials for the taxpayers have put you in charge. I don't know how you look at them and if there's a downfall and there's no money saved.
You know, again, $5 billion surplus. I wanted to give some money back to all the Arizona taxpayers. Whatever it could have been on a percentage of what you paid, you could have got back a small percentage. Everybody would have got a few dollars back, not the government money, their money being returned back to them, because if we have a surplus, we over, you know, charge on taxes. We have too much taxes. So that's something that I was trying to get across, but was unsuccessful. We didn't run the best budget, in my opinion. I voted against it. All the Democrats voted for it, if that tells you what kind of budget it was this year with the Republican majority. So, we can talk deeper into that. But the third kind of goes right into this, and there's a lot of topics here, but the third one I'm going to tell you is tax reform. We passed a bill last session that changes our income tax code, and instead of having a four-tier system, it phases into a two-tier system all the way to a one-tier system, which is a 2.5% flat tax for all income earners. Doesn't matter if you make, you know, $15,000 or $1.5 million a year. You're paying 2.5% income tax to the state of Arizona. And this next session, we're going to try to get it down to zero. Zero income tax state. I believe we can do it. I think it's good for Arizona. It's healthy. Other states have done it. Florida, you know, they have a zero income tax. They had a $20 billion surplus on a $100 billion budget. So it's capable of doing it here in Arizona. We can accomplish this. That helps everybody, especially with the inflation, or stagflation, they say. Zero income tax, that's our goal, and we're going to get there.
So a zero income tax also has another good consequence, which I believe it attracts businesses to the state, and we've been doing a good job of that. But how do you maintain and keep them from going other places, especially, I'm going to talk about your number one priority, if we are not a safe state and people relocate here, how do we get them to stay here? The tax incentive is one way, but I think you touched on it. But if we don't start supporting those that protect us, we're going to have a very serious problem. And also, I think if you look at what's going on in the border, I completely agree with you that the federal government is doing nothing when it comes to our border. We had Sheriff Daniels on Friday, And the stories that are coming out of Cochise County are horrific, with the cartels contacting our children to drive illegal immigrants from the border. Just so much crime is happening in Arizona, and we don't have enough resources to continue at the rate we're going. Over 5 million illegal immigrants in the country. They're not all in Arizona, but there's a significant amount of people here, and we're seeing it with an increase in violent crime, murders, sexual assault. So I don't want to understate that priority that you have and how critically important it is to the safety of Arizona citizens.
Well, Kathleen, again, there's so many things on the list, but it, without public safety, everything else crumbles. Without law and order, everything else crumbles. So that is a starting point. And we do need to, you know, focus on this border 100%. And again, like, if we get the wrong governor, it's going to be wide open. We're not going to do anything locally here. And as a state, we have to do it. But to attract people into our state, we have to have that high quality of life, which Arizona always has. And we need to preserve that. And I think everybody knows California is fleeing. And they're coming to Arizona. They're coming to other states. And if the jobs are healthy, the taxes are low, we have a thriving economy here in Arizona, because this is what we can control. Your state politics is more important than federal right now.
I agree.
Your local politics, your school boards, your city council, your county, your state. These are the races that are the most important of who you vote for. And if you want to have public safety, low taxes, fiscal responsibility, and a list of others, you know, we need to maintain a Republican state here in Arizona. Now, California is moving here. Some of them are conservatives fleeing and getting out of California. Some of them aren't. If you're coming from California and you're moving to Arizona and you enjoy the lifestyle here and you enjoy what we have to offer, stop voting Democrat, because that's what you just left California for. You need to understand that.
Okay.
Because we'll be no different than California.
So, question for you. Rusty Bowers did not get elected. He's been the speaker. Would you have any interest in that job?
You know, I am. And I am one of two running for Speaker of the House. And the reasons are, a lot of members came up to me and they know my background, my experiences in business. And this is a CEO level position. And they said, we need you. And asked if I would run. And I said, I would. And I embraced it. I know I can do a fabulous job. I know I'll be successful. And my goals are effective and efficient leadership as a state house, because right now we don't have that in government. And I'm going to drive that message. We're going to have a fiscal responsible budget. We're going to pass the priorities that we need, the American first, Arizona first priorities, to keep our quality of life strong here in Arizona, some of the things we just mentioned, and do it in an effective timeline. Believe it or not, we don't really set a lot of goals down there under current leadership. We don't have an agenda, a majority plan. These are basic 101 goals that you accomplish in business. We don't do any of those in government. We need to impose these and get this agenda, the strategy, and the session complete in a time frame that is efficient. And that's going to happen with me as Speaker of the House.
Well, I think that would be a great idea. Your slogan was promises kept, reelect. So that happened. How important is it, someone who's in the legislature, that you make a promise, that you say we're going to do this, that you don't kick the can down the road, and that you keep your promises with the voters of Arizona? I think you've got a lot of fatigue from people in both parties. So how do we win over independents and even Democrats to your way of thinking?
Well, keep in mind, I replaced in the 2020 election another Republican. So I primaried an incumbent and beat him, and then won the general election. And what I said was that I was, you know, a conservative, and I'm going to hold my conservative values that they want in this district. And I did, and that was the promises kept, because again, they had a Republican in the seat, and they chose me to be in that seat over him, because they knew that we needed to change it up. But I told them I'd keep the conservative promises, and I did. To answer your question, we need legislators that go down there to serve the people, period. And unfortunately, we don't have that. We have legislators that go down there to serve themselves. We have legislators that want the, you know, the pinnacle of their career. This is it, being a state legislator or a state senator. And this is not the pinnacle of my career. I have been successful in all my doings. I'm down there to serve the people, and that's my first priority. I don't think it's a difficult job when you go down there for the right priorities. If you're going down there to, you know, have the lobbyists buy you lunches and dinners and invite you everywhere and pass an agenda that only you succeed in politics, that's the wrong approach. And we need to vet these candidates across the board and get the ones that want to serve the people first. And independents, Republicans, Democrats will see that if they dig deep enough and look behind the scenes than the words that are being told.
Joseph Chaplick, thank you so much for joining us today. Keep on fighting. So glad to know you. Welcome back. I'm Kathleen Wynn, where we have solutions for everyday problems. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. My next guest is Judge Phil Ginn. And Judge Ginn assumed the role as the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary April 1st, 2021. Judge Ginn is a retired Superior Court judge, attorney, and businessman. He's been married to his wife, Lynn, for almost 42 years. They have four daughters, three sons-in-law, and five wonderful grandchildren, and it says in his bio he has lots of pictures. I understand. He holds a BA from the Appalachian State University, also his JD from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and a Doctor of Ministry from Southern Evangelical Seminary in Charlotte, North Carolina. Judge Ginn, thank you so much for being with us today. We're going to take on a topic that is near and dear to my heart, which is what is happening to Christianity in this country. And welcome to Win Tucson.
Well, thank you so much, Kathleen. It's my pleasure to be with you. I wish I was in Tucson.
It is a great place to be, and I attend a church here that I love. Tucson Baptist Church is my church, and they are very engaged in reconnecting the community to Christian values. There was a disturbing report that came out from Pew Research Center that indicates that America could no longer be a majority Christian nation by as early as 2045. And I believe that you have made comments about that and talked about it. Would you mind sharing with my listeners what you're seeing and how do we turn this around?
Well, first of all, Kathleen, I think we have to begin to redefine Christianity in America, or the term Christianity in America. One of the premises that we go on at SES is that probably true Christianity is already in the minority in this country. We have, I believe it was Oz Guinness, I hope I don't mislabel this quote, but he said he didn't mind people creating new religions as much as they do. He just hated the fact that they called them all Christian. We've got a lot out there trying to pass itself off as Christianity that's not Christianity. That's just not what we term at SES being biblically based, with a biblical worldview. Certainly some of the studies that George Barna has put out shown that the biblical worldview is probably a minority of what has been labeled as Christianity in America. And I place, quite honestly, in what I wrote, I placed a lot of the blame on Christ Church, who have basically shirked our duty in regard to educating even our own young people. And we're losing them by droves when they go off and they're sucked into the secular sewer pipe of this age and culture. So that's where I lay a lot of the blame, and I certainly am not the only one to reference 2 Chronicles 7:14, which states, "If my people who are called by my name," that's not "if America who's called by my name," because that doesn't apply. That applies to Christ Church, and we failed in that regard.
Is it a surprise that America is drifting away from Christianity, given the current culture and the, I'm going to call it hypersexualization of our society and the crime and just the, there's been, an all-out attack on Christian values in this country and around the world?
It was originally, Kathleen, a very subtle attack. But now it is a frontal attack. And I said this after the Dobbs ruling from the Supreme Court, that the gates of hell are going to attack true Christianity, and we see that. I certainly know that ultimately, I say this all the time, that the good times are really over for good in America, and they're not coming back, but Jesus is. And I'm not concerned about the end time. I really am not. I'm looking forward to Jesus' return. What frightens me for my children and my grandchildren is the reality that America that I knew and loved no longer exists, and it's getting worse.
Right.
And once I use the analogy of
of a contaminant seeping into a freshwater source. Sooner or later, the whole source is contaminated, and you can't reverse that very easily. And that's happening in our nation, I'm afraid.
So I have 16 grandchildren, not to create a competition, but I also have lots of photos.
Well, God bless you.
Thank you. And 7 children and one son-in-law who's a minister and my youngest daughter who's a minister. So I am on the forefront of this, and what I am seeing young people and my husband's and I, youngest 6 children are 31 to 37, and I see, and they're all 7 kids are married, and I see them struggling with their great parents. I'm blessed beyond measure, but how difficult is it as a parent? Because you made a very valid point. We are not growing up in the America that you and I grew up in, and how do we get back to those values? One of the things that has been a big reawakening here is what was going on in our schools.
Absolutely.
And I think that although there's, you know, and they've pretty much kicked God out of schools, if you know, public schools, that we used to say a prayer when I was growing up before the pledge, we don't do that anymore. We're not even allowed to really talk about God in schools. And how can we turn that around?
Well, I'll even take it a step further. We got out of a lot of churches.
No good.
You know, we've got, as Christians, true Christians in this country, we've got to fall back in love with Jesus to the extent that we realize what he has done for us. And we then have got to accept our responsibility for what has been done on our behalf to go to work in this nation. And I just see so many churches that are, and so many Christians who are so afraid of offending somebody that they won't speak out about issues that are needful and necessary. Now, I'm not trying to talk about bludgeoning people in the kingdom of heaven. And I'm not talking about politics here. Whether you're Republican or Democrat is immaterial.
Correct.
But Christians need to start speaking out about issues. They need to be heard. I saw something the other day that basically said that what's happening in America is not due to the people who are actually causing the issues. It's due to the fact that good people aren't speaking out against it. I honestly believe the churches are, and personally Christians are a failure. Let me say one other thing here,
please,
Kathleen, before we move on. I'm going to even get more specific than this. I think it's high time that Christian men stand up and be counted. The failures of manhood in Christianity have led to a lot of what's going on in our nation. I saw it in the court system.
Yes.
Where children didn't have good fathers, far more likely to go bad. I saw another startling statistic the other day. Is when the father comes to faith, 93% is his family will come to faith. If it's a mother who comes to faith, it drops precipitously low that the whole family will come to the Lord. So it's please do not misunderstand. I am not trying to degrade in any way single moms. They're doing a yeoman's job. I'm just saying that Christian men in America are need to stand up and be counted.
I think your point is very well taken, and the role of the father in any family is important. And we do have a lot of single parent households, and we have incentivized in this country putting people on welfare and taking fathers out of the family. And I believe that there's a direct correlation between fathers not being in families and the falling away from the church, to your point, because if a father leads his family to God, it is the way I believe that it is stated in the Bible and that is intended. We're about a minute out of a break, but when we come back, I would really love to talk to you about can we fix this? I think you've clearly stated the problem. What do we do as Christians? You started to talk about it. And what do we do as those that are grandparents wanting our grandchildren to have a chance to have a relationship with God? So we will be, when we come back, I will be joined by Judge Ginn. And I will look forward to finishing up that conversation right after this break. I'm Kathleen Wynn with Wynn Tucson. Thank you. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson, where we focus on issues, not politics. Judge Phil Ginn, the de-Christianization of America, and where do we go? I still believe that there are enough believers. I was reminded, we have 9/11 this a couple weeks ago. There was something that happened in the country in 9/11 when we were under attack, and we saw people flocking to churches, and I think that's only 21 years ago. How did we lose that? There was a following back into God that happened across this country. I know you remember it. I know I did. And I was hearkened to think that the churches were full. And from 21 years ago to today, the churches have been under attack. COVID didn't help. People weren't allowed to meet. And have we fallen away from God and the importance of having God in our lives?
Well, the first thing, and this is kind of simplistic, I guess. We talk about it in sports sometimes. You got to have a want to. There's got to be a decision, a clear decision. I'm going to stand up. In fact, our tagline at SES now is steadfast in the truth. And that's what true Christians are going to have to become. They're going to have to become steadfast in the truth. They're going to have to be willing to stand up. The second thing, and quite honestly, I want to brag about Southern Evangelical Seminary here, since we're on the cutting edge of this.
Please.
I think people need to be trained in apologetics, and that is what we use is philosophy to and theology in combination with apologetics to train people that Christianity makes sense. We have one of the first classes I ever took at SES is we had to look at the cultural issues and then determine the biblical position on the cultural issues and ultimately argue the biblical position on the cultural issues without ever quoting the Bible. And you begin to see that what the left is saying doesn't make a lot of sense. And there are very logical arguments to say why. Let's just take abortion, for instance. Abortion, the race and abortion is serious business. 80-some percent of the abortion clinics are in minority areas.
Correct.
The founder of Planned Parenthood was one that wanted to use genetics to, just like Hitler did, to improve the race. And the concept behind that, behind Margaret Sanger, was to begin to reduce and eliminate the black population. African-American population. And Planned Parenthood is doing a darn good job of it right now.
Yes, unfortunately. And unfortunately, that has become a political issue, and you see that it's been hijacked almost.
Absolutely.
And that we've lost sight of the value of human life and protecting all lives.
Yeah, and now you've got a gubernatorial candidate in Georgia who's saying that the fetal heartbeat doesn't exist. It's 6 weeks. There are answers out there to the stupidity that's being promulgated by the culture. But you know, Satan is the father of lies.
Yes.
And Jesus says, I am the truth. That's one of the I ams that he is. And we need to teach that truth to our children. And we're not doing a good job of that in our churches. We teach them Jesus loves me, and that just doesn't hold out when they go to sit in a college class somewhere where somebody's going to be spouting off a lot of things that sound reasonable at first glance, but don't have any underpinning underneath them.
I have a lot of parents that complain to me. They raise their kids up in a very Christian home, and then they send mm-hmm. them to college, and all the progressive, anti-religious doctrine at colleges, and they don't get the same kid back that they sent to the college.
Yeah.
And I think if there's a battleground, it is in our colleges across this country. Would you agree with that? Or
I've even dropped it down to the elementary schools. Yes. You know, the problem is that our colleges have been putting the teachers out into our elementary schools. And what has been learned, and this is somewhat true of Christian schools. We're looking now at the progressivism infiltrating even solid schools that used to be very much in line with a biblical worldview, and it's beginning to break apart. And it's based in, Kathleen, it's based on this concept that the government is not going to give them Pell Grants and Title IX and Title IV funding unless they kowtow to the transgender and all the different, whatever. They're taking up the whole alphabet now. We don't have any alphabet left before it's over with. And it is just absolutely robbing our children of a childhood. I mean, go figure. Who in the world would ever come up with a concept that a 3, 4, or 5-year-old ought to be talking about transgenderism?
Correct.
Much less anything that has to do with sex at that age.
Well, you know, there's laws.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's laws, and you being a judge, there's laws on the book about appropriate content, and when we went from the television to the internet, there's access that people that are trying to get content in front of our children have. There's nothing to stop them because although the laws are on the books, we've never adapted it to the internet.
Sure.
And the internet is where kids are groomed. I fight sex trafficking. So there are so many avenues into our children right now, and our children really need to be protected. And from the Bible, I think that is if there's any mission where we can make the greatest difference, is to protect our little children from, I say the devil is a liar. So protecting them from the lies and the misconceptions where their worldview is being corrupted. And I totally agree with you that, just saying Jesus loves you is not enough, because the other side is relentless in terms of the pervasiveness, where I think now I'm even hearing that they're trying to normalize pedophilia. And so if we don't fight back against that, that is pure evil. And I'm really hoping that Christians are willing to give voice to those that would harm our children. And I'd love to hear your comments on that.
Well, I just saw. I don't want to get too far down the road and misquote it, but I think it was Todd Starnes who had an article that came out today or yesterday about a transgender, transvestite, drag queen, and pardon me for saying this, it's disgusting, who was allowing children to play and touch areas of his body that it's yes. just disgusting to even think about it. But that was part of a program put on for kids. Where is, and I guess what I'm saying is, where's the uproar from our culture? But more than that, where is the uproar from our church? Why aren't the pulpits of our nation filled with men and women who will say, that's wrong, and we need to stand up against it?
I think you...
Now, I will hasten to add that we better in this country as Christians get accustomed to some bad things happening to us because we're willing to stand up for our faith. And I hope that we've got the courage to do so.
I think it takes great moral courage to do that, and you obviously are doing that. You have a quote from 2 Chronicles 7:14. Would you? I just love that. If my people who are called by my name, and if you will humble themselves and pray. Yeah, please, go ahead.
Right. It just says, if my people who are called by my, the 2 Chronicles 7:14 states, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. I simply said that this admonition was never intended for a general audience, even made up of good American church people. Only those of us who are truly Christ followers are singled out with this clarion call to repentance and action. So let us not be too quick to blame the younger generations for their shortcomings when it is the failure of Christ's church that has caused our beloved country to stumble.
I so agree. And if we can't, as adults, set a better example, and one of the things that we're looking for on this station and with our audience is to bring solutions to problems. And really, I see this as one of the biggest problems facing our next generation. We have a drug problem in this country. We have a public safety issue. And then we have people that are trying to groom and normalize hypersexualization, not only in our schools, but now it has corrupted its way into our churches. And I agree with you that we need good men to stand up. We need men to keep their role, not only in their families, but in their churches. And I think God is calling forth an army, but if we don't heed the call, I think we're going to have the end of the world as we know it. And I do believe that our values are important, and that our belief in God is an important value to uphold.
Let me give you a story, Kathleen, that I think will kind of drive this home. When I was a young fella, long before I married my wife, I went to pick this girl up for a first date, and I had to literally walk past her father, who'd been out in the yard working. And as I passed him, I knew I needed to say hello to him and introduce myself, and he kind of sized me up, and he said, "Son, you see that young girl over there?" pointing to the little gal I was going out with. And I said, "Yes, sir, I do." And he said, "I don't mind going back to prison for her." And that's the kind of attitude that we've got to have as parents and grandparents. And that is to stand up and tell this culture that we don't mind whatever the culture is going to throw at us. Our children, our grandchildren are so important to us that we'll take that heat, because we don't want to see them fall into the hands of the devil. And I don't see that in our churches, and I long to see that in our churches. And I just believe that a time is coming in America when we will have to pay the cost to name the name of Jesus. And I just hope that we have, as you indicated, the moral courage, which is very rare, a commodity in our culture, to stand up to this culture and say, enough's enough. You're not going to push us any further.
Well, I thank you for this, and I believe in everything you're saying, and please continue the fight, and we'll have you back. And thank you.
I'd love to come back. I look a lot better on the radio than I do on TV.
That makes two of us. Well, thank you so much. Have a great week, and God bless you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
This is Kathleen Wynn. We'll be back tomorrow.